Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
916-909-1320. Daniel, appreciate you being patient with us, man. What's on your mind?
Oh, no problem, Casey. Hey, Hammer, you hit it on the head for me as a longtime 49er fan. I don't understand how a lot of fans think that we're going to win a Super Bowl when, like you said, you stated it perfectly, the 49ers are trying to moneyball the quarterback position. And like you said again, when you get to the final four teams, we always have the worst quarterback. And always. I think that's just Shanahan. That's just Shanahan. That's the way he does it. I don't understand how you can look at the history of him here with the 49ers and think that it's going to be different this year. With that being said, do you think the 49ers will ever get rid of Shanahan? Because he's not going to win a Super Bowl here. It's just the way he built the team. He thinks that he can win a team with defense and a good run game with a quarterback that he can manage, and that's not going to get it done against the Mahomes and against the Hurts.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff, Daniel. I always knew people didn't know the difference. And I've always known people didn't know which one was D'Lo and which one was KC. I always expected that. And I think Daniel confirmed that at the beginning of the call. And that's fine. It doesn't bother us. We're it's still better than when we're in the area at the concourse of the Golden One Center and someone looks dead at us and goes, "Hey, Deuce and Moe." And we just couldn't figure out which one was Deuce and which one was Mo, but he was talking directly to us, and it was fascinating.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's incredible.
There's something he said there. I don't fully disagree with him about Shanahan. As somebody who has watched every game, and I love the NFL, and there are often times where I am extremely frustrated with Shanahan as a coach. And I always think to myself, okay, look, is he the right guy? We keep thinking offensive genius, and it's force-fed, and then he's too conservative. He's too conservative, way too often. And you're like, okay, look, this thing has potential to be, so multifaceted. Then I watch, the Kansas City Chiefs and some of the play design that they do, the things that they do at Travis Kelce, where he just does these weird pivots over the middle and catches a ball and boom, he's got 20 yards. There's so many things that they do that are intriguing to me, and I get it that you don't have the quarterback to do it, and that's why they went out and traded all those picks for Trey Lance, because they were hoping that he would be that guy, that they would have a Mahomes-type player.
Mm-hmm.
But they also went a little abstract there, and they didn't just go out and get, he was a stretch. He was a stretch where they took him. There might have been another team that took him there, but still, you didn't exactly go out and take a safe pick here. You took a guy out of a not a major gigantic college.
Who hadn't played.
He hadn't played a lot, and so you took some gambles here, and I think that the defensive side of the ball, by having low-paying quarterbacks, you've been able to go pay a Nick Bosa or a Trent Williams or a Christian McCaffrey or Fred Warner. You can do all of these other things because you're not paying 40 plus million for a quarterback, but it's about winning Super Bowls.
Can we still call Trey Lance a low paid? Now I understand salary wise, he is a low paying quarterback, but what it costs you to get him is not. Like no, Trey true. Lance was the roll of the dice, and I've been extremely critical of Kyle Shanahan through the years, especially with you know with Kenny, who is a big fan of Kyle Shanahan. But I do think this past season has to be considered his finest coaching job. Like, regardless of what it turned out to be, like, we can feel however we want to about, like, Brock Purdy. And you can love Brock Purdy and think that Brock Purdy is the future of the San Francisco 49ers at the quarterback position. That's perfectly fine. The fact is Kyle Shanahan, still had to put in an unproven backup quarterback after they made the decision to keep him. They made the decision to keep him as the backup quarterback, put him out there, and they win like 10 games in a row. Like, I think they lost a week before Halloween and didn't lose again until all their quarterbacks were gone in the NFC Championship. And again, I'm not excusing them going in with Josh Johnson as a quarterback. Like, I'm not saying that. I just think overall, Kyle Shanahan had a very, very good year as the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. Arguably, I know he's been to the Super Bowl in the past and all of that. I'd argue it was his finest coaching job.
But saying that, you have a championship roster.
I agree.
You have to win.
I agree.
A Super Bowl, and you have to have the ability to win a Super Bowl, not just like I think that's where I come down to. Like, would I put money on them to win a Super Bowl? And I don't know. Like, I love their defense. Their defense is going to be spectacular. And I love the versatility of the offense when it comes to, you know, the players that they have, whether it's Debo or it's McCaffrey or, you know. But again, you're taking such a risk. You're taking a risk with one of the most valuable things that we're ever going to see, one of the most valuable commodities we're ever going to see. That's a season of Trent Williams. Because those seasons are almost gone. And you're taking one of those seasons and you're rolling the dice that one of these three-headed monster quarterbacks, one which has never proven he can do anything on a good team, who's never been on a good team, one who's coming off of elbow surgery and was the last pick in the draft a year ago,
yeah,
and then one that is looking more and more like a number three overall bust. That's tough.
Yeah, that is tough. Well, let's stick with coaches. You alluded to this earlier in your boy, your buddy, Mark Stein, apparently wrote about this as well. Monty Williams declined a big money offer to coach the Detroit Pistons. I applaud Monty for that. I do not think that Detroit Pistons job is good. I think if you squint or you get LASIK, maybe you can convince yourself you're seeing something with that roster. Maybe it's one of those things where you see what you want to see. Like, I look at Orlando and I go, I see it. Like, I get it. I see Orlando. Detroit, I don't see it yet. I can't see it. So the fact that Monty turned down that job, I think that's a smart move for Monty Williams right there.
Oh, in my opinion. Yeah, because you have no real structure. All you have is young players. I mean, this is like the 2017, 2018, 2019 Sacramento Kings. That's what this is. It's a team with a bunch of young guys, and you don't know who they're going to be. And you hope that Cade Cunningham still has greatness in him, but you don't know. You got Marvin Bagley there for a couple more years. I love Jalen Duren. You got Jaden Ivey. I mean, you got a ton of talent, but talent in the NBA is a four-letter word. Like, there's a big difference between prospect and productivity. And if you can't find a way to convert that, you know, that's tough. And they don't have what you would consider, quote unquote, winning players. You know, again, you throw Weissman on that. Who's making the decisions? If Monty Williams is taking that team, I want full basketball control. And I'm not waiting for all of these players to see if all of these players can pan out. Because they can't. They can't pan out because they're all too young together. They have to have veterans that can help them get along And I know, you know, they got guys like Corey Joseph, and they've had some players, Bojan Bogdanovic, right? Is he still there? Yeah, I believe he's still there. But these are
They didn't move him. I think they were talking about like re-signing him, if I remember.
I think they did re-sign him, but then I thought it was with the intent that maybe they could. Either way, like that team to me really does have some major, major problems with. There's just no clear path forward for them. There's a bunch of clear paths forward or unclear paths forward, and that's a problem. And it like bringing along young players when they don't have any sort of defined thing around them is really, really difficult.
Yeah, that's a tough job. So tough that I completely forgot it was available until James mentioned it earlier in the show. Completely forgot, because we've been overtaken by the fact that there are contenders available in Philadelphia, Milwaukee, and Phoenix. A report coming out of Arizona says that Jordy Fernandez will interview tomorrow with the Phoenix Suns.
All right.
So it's a bit unclear based on dual reporting last night whether this is a final round of interviews or Phoenix is just doing interviews, because there was a five finalist list that was put out last night that did in fact include Jordy Fernandez along with Nick Nurse, Doc Rivers, Frank Vogel, and Kevin Young. And then it was Chris Haynes who followed that up with, well, they're not quite down to their final group yet because they'd like to talk to Kenny Atkinson and Charles Lee as well. Kenny Atkinson is another name along with Nick Nurse that you see tied to most of these jobs. Those contending jobs are very difficult for reasons that Joe Mazzulla is experiencing now. Now, Drapes brought this up a minute ago, or you know, about a half hour ago when he joined us, and I do think context is important. These jobs are really difficult. The Philadelphia, the expectations are really high. Milwaukee, Phoenix, expectations are really high. The difference with Joe Mazzulla is these coaches will likely be hired within the next week or so. That gives you June, and you're building your coaching staff. That's a far cry from what happened to Joe Mazzulla, where he was hired 7 days before the start of training camp, and he coached with Ime Udoka's staff, who, by the way, is probably going to go coach with Ime Udoka in Houston. So there almost certainly will be changes to the Boston Celtics bench next year, regardless of what they decide to do with Joe Mazzulla, because he never had the opportunity to hire his staff. I'm not suggesting he didn't know those guys. He obviously knew them and had worked with them, but that's not his staff. If he had ever had the idea of building out a coaching staff, and I'm sure that he did, he didn't get to do that last year. They went with Ime Udoka's staff. I'm sure that was Brad Stevens' version and perhaps just the Boston Celtics in general, their version of attempting to create stability.
Yeah, it's a mess. Like, it was a mess in the beginning, it's still a mess, and you got to find a way forward. So, like, when it comes to, like, building out that staff. And, like, look, I think there's going to be a lot of musical chairs when this all thing is said and done. I mean, there's going to be coaches and head coaches in new spots, but then the whole chase for the assistants is going to be wild. And that's going to be league-wide. It's not going to be just one spot. I mean, look at Doc Rivers' staff in Philadelphia. It's one of the best staffs in the game. You got, you know, Dave Yeager, you've got Sam Cassell, you got a bunch of guys on that staff. You got a bunch of guys on all of these staffs that are just, when a head coach gets fired, almost always the assistants are left hanging out to dry. Mm-hmm. Some assistants get kept on, especially if they have ties to the franchise, guys like Doug, you know, or Bobby. Like, sometimes they get kept on because they've been along with the franchise for so long. But, like, this is going to be a free-for-all once all of these things fall in place, where coaches are flying all over the place. It's going to be chaos. And it's going to be fun to watch because, like,
ain't got nothing to do with us.
Yeah, who knows what. Yeah, it's not weird that you're finally in a situation where, like, this isn't, it's better them than us, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, the instability that the Kings have gone through over the years and years and years, it kind of feels like this is one of those moments where they are one of the few stable teams as things all around them are crumbling.
So a couple of things. You mentioned, you've said something about De'Aaron twice this week that I want you to elaborate on when we return. Plus, James mentioned a rumor he heard regarding the California Classic earlier today. If you missed that, we'll run it back for you here when D'Lo and Casey with our ESPN 1320 Kings insider James Hamm, brought to you by Sky River Casino, returns here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend, or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Now, back to D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320.
The Adventures of James Hamm during the commercial breaks over on twitch.tv/ESPN1320 and youtube.com/ESPN1320. I want to get to Kings. I want to get to the remark you made about De'Aaron Fox, plus that California Classic rumor. But I want to hear from our man Ramsey first. 916-909-1320. Ramsey, what's going on?
What's good, gentlemen? Ham, Damien, just wanted to call in. I know it's a little late, but it's still relevant. Just wanted to talk about the feel-good story of the weekend this week in the PGA Club Pro Michael Block, the top 15 finish at the PGA Championship with a hole-in-one on Sunday at the 15th, qualified for next year's PGA Championship, and got flown out to Dallas this week to play in the Charles Schwab tournament as qualifying on a player's exemption for his top 15 finish that he had, and got love from Jordan with a text because he was wearing his shoes during the golf tournament.
Yeah, good stuff, Ramsey. Give that man a deal. Get that man a Jordan deal. He got a text from Michael Jordan. He said he got a, you know, he was getting just tons and tons and tons of messages, and rightfully so. It really is a cool story. What he was able to do this weekend, playing in that PGA as a club pro and playing the way that he did. Really, really, really cool story. Worth going out of your way to see the highlights if you hadn't. Really good stuff. Give that man a Jordan deal. That's what I say. Give that man a Jordan deal.
Yeah, I always love the PGA has that ability to have a guy come in and like have an incredible tournament. All of a sudden he gets like a 3-year, like basically like, carte blanche. He gets to play in every tournament for like 3 years. I wish we had more of these stories like in the NBA. Like I wish the G League did more like tryout situations. Like we used to see it, but there are still G League tryouts, but they're not nearly as popular as they were like in the beginning when it was the D League. I would like to see that where it's possible for some rando off the street to show up, hit every shot for some reason, just have a crazy day, and then next thing you know, they're on the cusp of making a a G League roster and then potentially an NBA roster. I think it's fun.
It definitely is. It definitely is. You know what else is fun is the California Classic. California Classic, which we expect to be back at the Golden One Center this July. Ham heard some rumors involving the California Classic that the San Antonio Spurs and Charlotte Hornets could be joining the group that plays here at California before heading to Las Vegas.
Yeah, I heard rumors this morning. And again, it's a rumor at this point because I haven't been able to confirm it. And I've heard that there's like we're going to hear the details of the California Classic here, like a press release here in the, maybe the next week or two. Like there's something we'll have more of an understanding what's happening. But the California Classic, it will be back at Golden One, which I do know. And then it's going to be potentially expanding to have a few more teams. And so what have we seen in the past? We always see the Miami Heat, the Los Angeles Lakers, and the Golden State Warriors, right? Yep. And then, of course, the Kings. Mm-hmm. So maybe a six-man tournament and two of those teams being the Charlotte Hornets and the San Antonio Spurs that are added. Anyway, it would be I don't know that means that Victor Wembanyama is going to play in Sacramento, but you never know. It could also mean that Scoot Henderson is there or Brandon Miller. So there's potential for something great. So as soon as I can get it locked down, like we'll talk about it in more like definitive terms here. But that's what I'm hearing, that there is a lot of chatter that is actually happening, that those teams will be in Sacramento.
I watched something with Shams involving Brandon Miller. You know, those short little stadium posts he puts, like six minutes or whatever. I thought it came across pretty well. Again, it's edited, it's short, and it's Shams. So you can take that for whatever you want. I thought it came across pretty well. I was interested to hear what he had to say. You know, Scoot said, I think it was last week, yeah, I think I'm the number one pick. I think I could be the number one pick. You heard Brandon Miller say, yeah, I'm good enough to be the number one pick. But I love, you know, Brandon Miller kind of sheepishly adds, it was 7'5", 8-foot wingspan, though. That's pretty nice. And he sings the praises of Victor Wembanyama. And so I only point that out because we brought to, you know, you may have read this and, you know, we certainly read it. We discussed it on the show, was how Brandon Miller is doing in interviews and how he looks and how there's been some question about that. And that's one of the really frustrating things about the draft process is all of that could be true. Like Brandon Miller could look overweight. The interviews may not be going well. That could be 100% true. It could also not. And a lot of that stuff is leverage. A lot of that stuff is hoping to change someone's draft position. Like these general managers, through these media members, regularly they play a game with these athletes' lives. And where they get drafted is a huge part of their life. It involves, you know, where they live. It involves their salary. It involves what they make. It involves a lot. And you always hear stories about something not going well, workouts not going well, interviews not going well, and then the day of the draft, a player winds up exactly where you thought they were because this was all a game that these teams were trying to play in hopes that the player would drop a little bit further in the draft and they would actually be the ones who'd be able to take them.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest that, like, for Sacramento, it's the Tyrese Halliburton thing where he could have gone as high as 2, and then he got to this range where his, like, according to people that I've talked to, like, his people wouldn't share his medicals with a whole group of teams from like 3 all the way to 9, where they're like, look, just we're okay with you not drafting him. And he, of course, was coming off wrist surgery. He got injured in his sophomore year at Iowa State. And so there was a lot of people that the Kings were trying to, I mean, not the Kings, that his agent was actually trying to push him to the Kings at 12, that they thought it was a perfect spot for him and that he would be given like an opportunity to play major minutes in year one. So like these things do happen. There's also like, always look out for the players that you keep hearing could go top three, and then they fall to number 19. Like, a lot of that is agent play, a lot of it, where guys are really, really promoted heavily through their agencies. And then the day of the draft, the day before the draft, you might hear this, oh, it sounds like so-and-so is slipping down draft boards a little bit. It's like, well, they're slipping down draft boards because you put them at way too high of a spot in the draft board. Mm. Very rarely do we have the opposite, where a guy goes from number 20 all the way up to number 4. I mean, like, I can remember Deion Waiters, like, being a guy who wouldn't even work out for teams and was considered around, like, number 20, and he ended up in the top 5. And I can remember Johnny Flynn. Mm-hmm. Who was supposed to be more like a 15 to 20 pick, and next thing you know, he jumped all the way up to whatever, number 4, number 5, the Ricky Rubio, him and were both drafted by Minnesota. Yeah. No, at 5 and 6, right? So it's the Tyreek Evans draft. They're the next two picks after Tyreek. And then they miss bad because Steph is right after that.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, shoot, you go back to last year. It was Jabari until hours before. Just kidding. It's Paolo. We asked for weeks, how is Paolo Banchero not the number one? Like, what are we missing? Like, Jabari looks cool, but how is Paolo Banchero not the number one pick in the draft? Then all of a sudden you hear Paolo Banchero is the number one pick in the draft. And Orlando kind of did the, we kept it a secret, and there's been rumors they've said, oh, if we could stick it to Houston along the way, then that's what we do.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what did that do to Jabari? For weeks, he's the number one pick in the draft until suddenly he's not. What does that do to him?
They don't care because he's not their player.
And that's my point. That's my point, is be careful what you read. Be careful what you take seriously. Because
except for with Victor, he's going number one. There's Victor, no question.
I don't believe this is a ploy by virtually the entire NBA media to ensure that the placement of Victor Wembanyama. He's certainly going number one.
Yeah, and you know what? You were you mentioned something earlier, and I was going to get back to it, and I forgot when we were talking about Steve Kerr and then Popovich and. Popovich hanging out and waiting, and like, this has happened and stuff. I'd also point out, like, this, it's something that I think may have been slightly missed, but Greg actually lost his wife to cancer in like 2018. So I think his life changed dramatically, and like, sticking around became more of a necessity for at least a year or two while you're through the recovery process and stuff like that. So I'm glad he's still coaching, and I'm glad that he's sticking around to see this next iteration. And I'm also, if I'm every top tier assistant in the league, or if I'm Monty Williams, I'm doing everything in my power to slide onto that Greg Popovich coaching staff.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
Because you're going to have somebody's going to be the heir apparent that gets to coach Victor Wembanyama in like year two, year three, year four, whenever it is. It's coming, and it's not that far off. I mean, Popovich is, I think he's 75.
Man, yeah. Is he really that old? Wow.
Yeah.
Could you, I do think it's a long shot. Could you imagine if Victor Wembanyama's first NBA basketball game is played at the Golden 1 Center and what that's going to look like?
Yeah, because it already happened. It was called LeBron James.
Yeah, we saw that. Yeah,
and yeah. I'll make sure that my guy Sean Cunningham, he's 74.
That's that's not the autograph story, is it?
Yes,
that is. Oh, that was opening night. That is the autograph
LeBron
story.
James. Yeah, the great. That, I mean, that's off the record. So
it's off the record. Wait a minute. I think that happened on a. I think that story was told on a regular podcast.
Yeah,
it was definitely told on a happy hour.
It's an amazing story. Like,
it's incredible.
For those who have no idea what we're talking about, the first
Fox 40 is going to hear this and fire Sean over it.
The first game that Sean of LeBron James's career, Sean was covering and had got audio from the locker room and had an audio device that actually like sent a digital link. And he was trying to get this audio to download. And while he was standing there courtside after the game, trying to get audio to download, looking down at his recorder, LeBron James came over and signed an autograph for a young man and his grandmother standing right next to Sean, and Sean wasn't paying attention, and Sean happened to have a program from the first game underneath his recorder. It was something he had, like, he was carrying it, and LeBron grabbed it out of his hand and signed it and handed it back to Sean, and we're not allowed as media members to ask players for autographs. And then Sean just looked at LeBron like, bro, I'm not allowed to take that. And LeBron is 19 years old and has no idea. It's his first game, and hands it back to Sean. And Sean's like looking at, and the people from the radio are looking at Sean, and Sean's looking at them like, I don't know what is happening. And so Sean has a autographed game one LeBron James from that first opening night.
That's like, awesome.
And he just had that frame last year.
That's awesome.
I don't think we're supposed to tell that story, but sorry, Sean, we told that story.
I'm pretty sure is that where I heard it was the happy hour? That can't be the only place I heard it. I definitely heard it on the happy hour. Do you have any LeBron James autographs?
No.
I got LeBron's. It wasn't for me. I bought two Olympic jerseys. I bought them in China.
Okay.
I bought a LeBron and I bought Kobe, and my intention was to get them signed at the hotel. And I didn't get either one of them signed, but I brought the LeBron one with me the next time they were in Sacramento. And he signed it for me, but I gave it to my best friend and my godson, who are huge Cleveland Cavaliers fans. And I never got the Kobe. I still have the Kobe jersey. It wasn't to wear. It was to get autographs. So it's like a 4X. So it's not. I can't do anything with it. But I have that Kobe Olympic jersey that I got from China that I never got to get signed. It's an autograph I didn't get.
Yeah.
In any event, shame on Sean. We'll report when Sean Cunningham has been fired for something that happened 20 years ago with a different company.
Yeah.
You said something earlier. And you've actually said it twice this weekend, and you said it You said it yesterday, and I didn't really ask you to expand on it, but you said it again today when we were talking about the Kings, and room for improvement and guys who can improve, and you know what steps this team could take to be better. And you've mentioned De'Aaron Fox twice, mm-hmm. and I'm curious, like, what do you want to see better from De'Aaron Fox, or let me rephrase that. What do you think we can see better, or what do you think we could see different from De'Aaron Fox next year?
Okay, so first up, I think when you...
Because clearly he's not doing enough for you, so I want to make sure.
No, I think he's doing a ton. Like I think he had a very, very good season, and I think where I believe that he can improve, number one, he can be a better three-point shooter, which he understands. Mm-hmm. And it's something he's going to work on nonstop during the offseason, right? It's something that he always works on, but it's something that he's going to focus on. But I also think that, like, we've talked about this in the past, like the leveling out of the ups and downs. And when you reach a certain point, you know, we always talk about, like, okay, so when you get into the league, you want to make the starting five, right? And if you're a first-round pick, a high first-round pick, you're like, okay, I want to be all rookie. I want to, all those things. But then you get to a certain point in your career where you're just, like for De'Aaron, you're like a near all-star level player. And you couldn't get over the hump. He got over the hump this year. Mm-hmm. Now he's got to all-NBA. Now he's played in the playoffs. Like he now understands that there's a different, first of all, you need better players around you to help you along the way, for sure. But there's also a point where you understand that the game gets more difficult and the intensity gets bigger and the moments get bigger. And I think he just understood all of that and he rose to the occasion. And clearly he had the finger issue, which was a problem, which limited who he was in the final couple of games of the playoffs. But what we were able to see from him was pretty spectacular. And I think that he's a player that is going to learn and take from this season in particular what it's like to get that kind of fanfare, to get that kind of love, and he's going to embrace it, and he's going to make that the new standard for him. And that's how I think he can get better. And I think he can get better by being more efficient, by being a better leader, by being a better defensive player, But these are all things that he's gotten better at as we've moved along throughout his career. And I think he'll just take another logical step. And it's from the step from all-star, fringe all-star, to all-star who gets in on a medical replacement, to a full-fledged all-star and an all-NBA player that like wants to cement his place among the top 15 players in the league. And I think we're going to see that step from De'Aaron Fox. And whether that's 27 points and 8 assists a game, or it's right around the same, 25 and 6 or 25 and 7, we're just going to see it be better. It's going to be more consistent. It's going to be every night. It's going to be just the version of him that we keep seeing that keeps improving.
So to kind of take something Kyle Draper said earlier about what the Kings did this year won't be good enough next year. And he went on to talk about the West and all that. We could talk about that tomorrow. But we take that and isolate it off of the Kings and put it on De'Aaron. De'Aaron does what he did this year next year. Is that good enough to be an all-NBA player? Good enough to be an all-star?
Yeah. Yeah, well, and once you get there,
because
there.
I wonder how much the story,
you mean if they're not the feel good stories,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I still think that they're going to be like this team.
Like,
looks
does like, he have to be that much better because of that? Because maybe. Of the story?
Yeah, this team looks like a team that's set up over the next like 4 or 5 years to be anywhere from 2 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think getting to 1, I mean, they would have to have some sort of major adjustment happen. Like, someone big would have to walk in the door, or something extraordinary would have to happen with a guy like Keegan Murray or something for you to take the leap.
Or Jokic is gone for 82 games.
Yeah, someone's gone. Yeah. But, I mean, to be a legit number one, you know, so that's where I would look. And, you know, people can say, well, you know, what do you mean he can get better, right? His stats could be the same, but he's a better player. And I would point to this. And, like, don't think of this as I'm comparing – De'Aaron Fox to Michael Jordan. But in like year 3 of Michael Jordan's career, he averaged 37.1 points per game. He never averaged 37 points a game ever again. And it took until I think year 8 for him to win a championship. And each of those championship years, he was like really, really exceptional, but they weren't nearly as good statistically as some of his earlier seasons. And you can be a much better player without the statistics showing it, but everyone else in the building can see it and feel it, whether it's you're a better defensive player, you're more efficient, or you're better in big moment situations. Like, there's a way that you mature and grow into the player you're going to be, and you just become better. And so that's what I expect from him. I expect him to be a better version of himself. And he still is a player with the most untapped potential, in my opinion, on that roster outside of Keegan Murray. Mm. Like, Keegan Murray, it's because his starting point is at 12 points a game and a rookie, and we know that he can be much better than that. Mm-hmm.
You've always comped De'Aaron Fox to Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
And one, it still checks out. It still works, but the great footnote to this is, in terms of like where they were in their career, next season for Russell Westbrook, in terms of how many years they were in their career, that was when Russ went from 23 points per game, 21 points per game, to 28 points per game, and he was 28, 7, and 8 in that run. He had already been an all-star. He had been an all-star 3 times at that point. But his game in his 6-7 season elevated. And Kenny and I were looking at this earlier because that obviously, you know, I'm a Russell Westbrook guy. That comp has always stuck in my head. And looking at what De'Aaron could do next, if you stuck with the comp of Russell Westbrook, you see, oh my God, he continues on this track. And again, if you look at it, the numbers pan out year after year after year after year with the De'Aaron and Russell Westbrook comp. He could, I mean, in the next year, the following year, his points per game went down, but his assist went to double digits for the first time. Then the year after that, of course, that's when Kevin Durant was gone. He went to 31 points per game, 10 assists, 10 rebounds, won the MVP. But I love that comp, and I love, because I know De'Aaron Fox is also a Russell Westbrook fan, I love that comp and what it could potentially mean if it continues to track the same way for De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, like, and just because I don't think De'Aaron's ever going to be the rebounder that Russell is, and that's, but that doesn't mean that he can't be equally as good or equally as effective as Westbrook. Like, I've always thought De'Aaron has a much better shot selection than Russ. Neither one of them have ever been great perimeter shooters, but even Fox, I would take Fox's mid-range jump shot over Russ's most of the time. And I just think that, like, we can't look at them, like, it's not going to be a disappointment if he doesn't reach the level that Russ reached statistically.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't think he's ever going to be on a team where it's literally just him and a guy like Durant. Like, because that's not how the Kings are built. That's not with Sabonis. It's going to be him and Sabonis, but that's not going to be a situation where, like, you know, where I got in trouble with Russ and KD years ago, where I asked him about, you know, three games in a row in the Western Conference Finals, they'd shot a combined 59 shots.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that that's going to be who the Kings become, where it's just these two guys shooting all of the shots. That's a lot of shots.
Yeah.
And so I don't know that he'll continue to hit all of those markers, but I expect him to be a better player this coming year.
Well, and you know, there were some pretty, you know, drastic changes in here. If I could see De'Aaron continuing to hit these markers, but the numbers just went incredible when Kevin Durant left. Like,
yeah.
his entire role with the Oklahoma City Thunder had to change when Kevin Durant left, and that's why you saw, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4 straight years of averaging 10-plus assists. That's why, well, shoot, it was 3 straight years of averaging a triple-double. Like, mm-hmm. that's why that happened. But it's you know, De'Aaron is still a fascinating, you know, what-if. De'Aaron is still not a what-if. He's a fascinating what's next, because we're all so – I think we're also, from people who have watched him from jump, we're also happy for him to finally have this moment where he's recognized as one of the league's, you know, great players. You're a top 15 player. You're an all-pro player. That's
yeah.
the category that you're in. And now it's like, okay, that's cool. He's not going to settle. So what's next? And now it's a year under his belt of not only playing with Domantas Sabonis, but playing with Mike Brown as well. It's his first year in the NBA playing with a competent team for an entire season, playing, you know, with playoff, you know, having playoff expectations, quiet playoff expectations during the season. Now those playoff expectations next year are going to be really loud. And the entire, and this is what I think all of us talked about towards the end of last season when it was clear that the Sacramento Kings are going to make the playoffs, was enjoy this. Enjoy this moment. Enjoy how you feel. Enjoy the Portland game when it's clinched and all of that, because next year, it's not going to feel like this.
Mm-hmm.
Next year, the Sacramento Kings are going to be a bigger story in the NBA. And we could talk about the Western Conference and all of that tomorrow, because you brought up something that I think is a much longer discussion. But the Sacramento Kings have a very real chance of, you know, being near the top of this conference, as you just said, 2-6. Next year, I can see them closer to the 2 spot, again, for reasons that'll take a long time to explain, so we'll talk about them tomorrow. But another reason that he could potentially step up, another, you talk about untapped potential,
mm-hmm.
with De'Aaron, it's on that defensive end.
Like, oh, yeah.
Just this year, we saw growth on the defensive end. I'd argue we saw a lot of growth on the defensive end. We've always known what he's been capable of doing offensively. We've seen him take steps in his growth on the offensive end. This was the first time where it was like he was consistently a better defender. This is what Doug Christie's been talking about for years. We saw signs of that. We saw a lot of signs of that. We saw regular play of him being a two-way player, of him being a strong defender. That's that to me, when you talk about room for growth, that might be where the most room for growth is on that defensive side of the ball.
Well, that, and I'll also point something out too, like defense is a funny thing, right? So the Kings are one of the worst defensive teams in the NBA, no question. Like, I'm not going to defend anything that happened. They were bad defensively. But I kind of look at it the same way we talked about Jason Tatum earlier. When the three-point shots start falling for his teammates, for him and his teammates, but for his teammates, that's when the space is created, right? So with De'Aaron Fox, I'll kind of flip it the other side. If you had better defenders around him, it would actually help him be a better defender. Like, that's the way it works. Like, if you have great defenders flanking you, if you have better length and athleticism around you, then it does help you become a better defender. It closes some of the gaps, some of the spacing that the other team is dealing with. It gives you, like, the inline drive behind you. Like, it gives you more confidence to stay in front of your player, but also knowing that you have someone behind you that can block a shot, that changes the way that you defend. And if they are able to put better defenders around him, I expect him to even take a bigger step defensively. Because just because having those guys, having not having to cover somebody or not playing out of position, not running over, trying to help, and then having to get back your guy, all of these things play into, you know, if you can raise the level overall of the team, you can be better. And so I think he's a guy that needs, he needs shooters to be at his best as an offensive player, but he also could use length and athleticism for him to be his best on the offense, on the defensive end around him. Like, I think if you can add the right players around him, you know, it doesn't matter how far a quarterback can throw a football. If he doesn't have a left tackle, he's in trouble. Right. And so I feel like a lot of the time that we claim that this guy's a bad defender, that guy's a bad defender, well, it's very possible that, like, De'Aaron Fox looks like a much worse defender because the guy to his right and the guy to his left are leaving the gaps too big. They're not closing up space. They're not doing the things that they need to do that makes life simpler for him to defend. And so I expect them to really attack this type of issue in free agency, through the draft, and through trade coming up.
A coach once told me it's really tough to be critical of guys on the defensive end. Now, obviously, there are times where it's very clear the defender missed something or just got beat.
Yeah.
But a lot of times, the way it was explained to me is kind of what you just said. You don't know what his teammates were supposed to do. He could have run. He could have played that exactly the way the coaches taught him to play it and told him to play it and demanded that he play it and practiced that he played it. And two other guys missed what they were supposed to do, or one other guy missed what they were supposed to do, or they were just slow at it. Sometimes that stuff is easier to spot than others. And then sometimes you just see, whew, they got beat. That's sometimes pretty easy to spot. But you talked, you know, one thing that I keep getting hung up on, you know, I don't know how much better this team is going to be defensively next year.
I think they're going to be better. Like, I think you've, but again, I told you, I look at the limitations of the guards and I see that there's a problem. Like, your best defensive guard is going to play 15 minutes a night. That's not enough to make an impact. You know, it doesn't matter how good defensively Kessler Edwards is. If he doesn't play, he can't be great defensively.
Davion really has to make defenses pay, because in the biggest moment of the season, the Warriors said, go ahead.
Yeah,
beat Shoot us. It.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
Go ahead. Because five ain't going to do it. Go ahead. And he made them pay in game one. He hit a huge three in game one. And game one or two, I can't remember which one, but he hit a huge three. But that was kind of it. And they let him shoot those final couple of games, you know, two of the final three games of the series. They go ahead, shoot it. And he did. And they kept playing him the same way. And that's he has to make them pay. And I know there were times he tried to veer away from that three-point shot and attack the basket, And you know, the downside, and I appreciate that mindset, but the downside to that is they were just there waiting for him. Mm-hmm. It's like, we'll let you shoot. Oh, go ahead, drive, because there's three of us here. And it just put him in a bad spot, put Davion in a really, really bad spot.
Yeah, and that's why I keep saying, like, it's possible that, like, they do make other adjustments in that backcourt. Like, it's possible that we don't see the same starting lineup. It's possible that we see a different backup point guard. Like, I think if you're going to get better defensively, you need more length, you need more athleticism, and you need more three-point shooting. That comes at every single position. That's not just at the small forward or the five. Like, you need that at every single position on the court. And that's what I think the Kings are going to do. They're going to attack this in a very specific way, and they're going to try to get better. And so, I mean, we already know they're chasing Sasha Vezenkov really tough, you know, really hard. But
he's not exactly Hakeem Olajuwon, though, is he?
But he's none of these things that they, outside of the three-point shooting. But it does allow you, if you have Sasha, it makes you have the ability to go get a more defensive-minded five or more defensive-minded three, because all of a sudden you aren't losing your shooting when you go to the bench. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just a piece to the puzzle, but it's really complicated, and they've got a lot of work to do to put it together. And I expect, again, like 30-40% of the roster to change. And that's not because I don't think that, like, these guys don't deserve jobs or something. It's that you got to keep improving and keep adjusting, and you know what you need. You know the length and the athleticism you need. You got to go get it. And it doesn't matter how you do it, but you got to do it.
Davion holds down the defensive end with Malik and Sasha. Feels like you could use one more.
Well, that's, you know, again, that's where I'm saying, like, if you're going to re-sign Trey Lyles and try to go side-by-side Trey Lyles and Sasha Vezenkov as a 4-5 combo off the bench, you better have crazy length and athleticism at the 1 and at the 3. Like, crazy.
That's not Davion, though. Oh, James trying to trade Davion again. Dang it, James. Come on, man.
I'm not
trying
to do anything.
No, like, seeing it's a puzzle, man. Seeing how you put all of this together with, you know, the strengths of the guys on your roster and in some cases the limitations of guys on your roster is tough. It's tough. It'll be fun to watch. It'll certainly be fun to follow. James did, I believe, 9 podcasts in the last 24 hours or so. If you haven't caught up on the Kings Beat, it is available for you. A fun listen with Sean Cunningham and James Hamm, and then Brendan makes a run in on his vacation. That's available
from Mississippi River.
You gotta hear that story. It made me. I was working on today's show when Brendan said that, because I wasn't watching live, and I looked at the screen like, really, and what was you like? No, Brendan, no, that's bro. You gotta go watch it. It's funny. It got all a right. Pop out of me. It made me laugh. So make sure you check out the Kings Beat. Make sure you become a premium subscriber over there at thekingsbeat.com as well. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get it from. Subscribe to the D'Lo and KC podcast. That way, in case you missed anything, you can run it back, which we'll do here on the Odyssey app in 1320 AM. Much more ahead here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. and great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.